Intervju Radija Študent.
Space, the final frontier, intervju z Angelom Frmulnom. Angela Frmulna lahko trenutno najdete v Ljubljanski moderni galeriji, kjer svojo posadko vsak dan od jutra do večera gradi strukturo zvezdne ladje. Seeker, skupno ime za serijo mednarodnih projektov, v katerih se s pomočjo vsakokrat nove lokalne skupnosti razvija skulptura vesoljske ladje, je skupnostni umetniški projekt, ki vzpodbuja razmislek o prihodnosti človeškega bivanja in preživetja. Frmuln ga tokrat s pomočjo zavoda projekta Tol razvija že četrtič in je poleg serije simbiotičnih instalacij Biomod, v katerih se združujejo ekologija, igričarska kultura in družbena interakcija, njegov najdlje trajajoči projekt. Sama epohalnost Seekerja se odseva tudi v osebnosti Frmulna, trenutno najbolj iskanega belgijskega sodobnega umetnika, med drugim pa tudi ekologa, fotografa, raziskovalca vesolja, člana programa TED Fellows, poveljnika fiktivne NASA-ine misije na Mars High Seas, pisca in družbenega delavca z doktoratom iz naravovarstva in teatrologije. Preden se bomo potopili v debato o človeku v vesolju in odnosu znanosti do umetnosti ter ne nazadnje o tem, kdo bi si v vesolju zaslužil imeti prvi koncert, smo ga najprej povprašali o njem.
Since your CV is so big, I would like to ask you if you feel like a bit schizophrenic from time to time.
I never feel schizophrenic. I have no idea what it means. It's a good question. I don't think anybody ever asked me this. Usually they ask me, are you a scientist mostly or mostly an artist? That's a question I get a lot. And usually I find that question more interesting than the actual answer because it shows how we think about people's capacity. So it actually tells us much more about how we think about people than about the actual situation. I think most people actually have multiple interests. And if we would have a society in which the idea of pursuing multiple interests would be more stimulated and not the educational system that we currently have, where we are very much trained to specialize in one field, even though you can nowadays, if you're stimulated to pick up some extra domains, we're still living in a system that is very much dominated by the Industrial Revolution. Ken Robinson gave this very interesting TED Talk, How Schools Kill Creativity, and he really talks about this. And I think it's the same thing for me. I mean, I've been having these multiple interests since I was a kid, and independently, I've been pursuing all those interests, so it never feels as if I'm schizophrenic. For me, it's definitely not a point to create a hierarchy between what is more difficult and more easy and all the different things that I do. Every single thing has its own set of problems. It's simply impossible, and it's not very relevant for me. I'm doing different things indeed. I'm a visual artist, I'm a space systems researcher, I'm a biologist, I'm also a community organizer, so there's all these different things. I think combining these different things is what keeps it very creative. And it's very beneficial to work in these different fields because you can literally jump from one field to another. And if you're stuck into one thing, you can move to the other. And they kind of cross-fertilize each other. What typically happens is when you're focusing on one field and you're really stuck there, is you need this fresh perspective. You need this fresh distance. I mean, you can sleep over it. You know, that's a typical thing that people say. But temporarily moving to a different field also takes you away from a field you're stuck in. But also this different perspective that you're cultivating helps you to solve problems. And Most of the things that I'm doing is actually problem solving. I mean, we're trying to advance into the future with all the communities that I'm setting up. This is the core thing of what I'm doing, trying to move into the future with issues that are very important about the future. And obviously, you will get stuck. Moreover, since I'm working with communities, I have to deal with psychology and sociology and all kinds of cultural issues. So obviously, there is a lot of moments that you get stuck. And I actually like that theme of moments getting stuck. It's the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance that is basically almost all about getting stuck and how to get out of it. And the book really showed me, taught me a lot about this. And sometimes you just have to observe a situation where you're stuck and just look at it a little bit disconnected. And then the solution will come bubbling up. And just having that multitude of different perspectives is definitely very conducive to move forward and to advance things.
I'm gonna ask you again, and you just answer, like, is it harder to work with people or with stars and spaceships?
The question whether it's harder to work with people or with stars is once again a tricky question, because
based on my experience
for NASA, the Mars simulation mission that I did, I noticed that one of the main problems, of course, of bringing communities and human culture into deep space is the people. And it's just the psychology of people living together. Is that harder? I think for some people it will be harder than for other people. I'm a people person. So for me, I'm not going to say it's easy, but it comes quite natural for me. I can imagine that for an engineer who suddenly is dropped into the role of leading a group, it might be terribly hard because he doesn't really have the interest or the skills to do that. Definitely, bringing people into deep space is not just about keeping people alive as a machine. It's probably mostly about psychology.
How do you prepare before you enter a new community? Do you make an investigation or some kind of like armchair research about the culture you're working with?
Yeah, there's a few strategies that I've been developing over the past few years to enable myself to embed myself in a different culture and to do some meaningful community work there. It's never without flaws. I'm not going to say that I'm the perfect cross-cultural community organizer. From every project, I learn from my mistakes as much as from the successes. But there are two strategies that I consistently use. The first one is to go at least once or a few times before I actually start the project. There is no point setting up a community project and just going there and reading about it before and then going there and starting. That's never going to work. And those first visits for me have a double purpose. On one hand, I do outreach. I give a lot of talks. I try to spread my message to see if we can connect my project with local needs and local interests and see where we can meet each other. And I hang out with people. I go out and we have a beer, or we have, you know, we go dancing or something. All those things are very important too. You build a human relationship with the people you're going to work with. Secondly, I almost always work with a local counterpart. So usually I am co-leading the project. And right here in Slovenia, I'm currently developing the Seeker project and the Museum of Modern Art. And my co-leader is Uroš Feber. We're actually the two leaders of this entire project. And in this case, Uroš is very useful to have him together with me, and he can explain certain aspects on how Slovenians work in groups, for example, which is slightly different than what I'm used to from Belgium. So going in advance and then giving yourself a couple of months to absorb the experience and to come up with ideas, staying in touch with those people, maybe going back again, and then working with a local counterpart are really crucial to somehow make it successful.
Seeker aims to develop a sculpture of a starship, which is like this interstellar travel vehicle, which travels between stars. And as far as I know, humankind never developed that kind of vehicle yet. And since I can see it's not just a sculpture, but the whole concept, I'm wondering from where the main idea on how Seeker should look like. And I think it's not from sci-fi movies.
So with the Seeker project, we want to develop sculptures, starship sculptures, with communities. The idea is not so much to create a designed object that could function as a prop in a science fiction movie. We're not interested in creating something that just has a sort of theatrical value. We really built systems. So the sculpture is a system. What do I mean with that? Is that it contains living biology, ecosystems, food growing systems, and it contains technology. And it also is designed on the inside in such a way that people can actually live in it. So you have this fusion of ecosystems, technological systems, and social systems that are actually meeting each other in the Seeker project. And this is really very important. This is the core of the project, actually. As much as it has a very sculptural look and it has it has its own specific aesthetics that are determined by the group I'm working with, it is a system. Now, the system is actually used, and that's where it becomes really interesting. We're actually using Seeker starships to run isolation missions in art contexts. We've done this a couple of times. I've done this in Z33 in Belgium. I've done this during the Dutch Design Week in Holland. We lock ourselves up with a small group of team members, and we don't come out. We make sure we have our sanitary system, we have our water supply, we have our food growing, we have our food supply, we cook, we sleep there, and we have very intense discussions. I've only done this a couple of times for a couple of days, but I sensed immediately that this has an incredible potential. Also for cultural production. Being together so close and talking about big issues is incredibly is incredibly invigorating for the mind. It's very inspiring. So I really want to start developing this idea of artists, designers, scientists locking themselves up within their own creation, within an institutional context, and then coming back out with new insights.
So I'm going to do it here too?
The idea is to develop that. Run an at least one isolation mission here in Ljubljana. Yes.
One day, 2 days.
Well, I'm hoping for at least 3 days. If we can pull that off, it'll depend on the systems that we can put in place.
Okay. But if we get back to the starships, Seeker is like an utopian project, don't you think? Or do you think that in some kind of technological way it could be possible to develop that kind of thinking, like in the next 50 years or?
Seeker is definitely an utopian project. On the other hand, there is actually quite some research on starship design. And believe it or not, the American military are funding starship research, which I'm not so sure is a good idea.
Why not?
If the military are funding our first visit to a different star, I'm not sure that's the kind of culture you want to bring to a different star. On the other hand, I have to be realistic. The entire space industry comes out of the military. So traditionally, the military have always been at the source of boosting and developing space industry. It's just like I'm currently very much interested in developing human culture in deep space. Human culture, I'm not talking about painting or playing guitar in space. I'm talking about a broader approach of developing a context where humans can fully develop themselves in outer space with an acknowledgement of the incredible cosmos they're in, which has creative components, artistic components, as much as scientific and engineering components. So it's a broader culture.
Culture.
Yes.
Okay.
And with the perspective of bringing culture...
But it's still a human culture.
Yes, bringing a human-rich culture to deep space, which is actually a very holistic way of looking at things. I don't think it meshes well with a military mission, and that's why it seems to,
okay,
you know.
The military like also gave us the internet, so.
Yes, of course, the military gave us the internet. I'm not entirely against the military, and I might end, you know, but you know what I mean. It's
yeah, I completely understand.
It would be a fresh start if we could leave that military. One of the main issues I have with the military tradition is that it's very top down per definition. And so you get this very top-down tradition in space exploration. And what I've experienced personally during my NASA-funded High Seas mission was a more bottom-up approach. We were given an enormous level of autonomy, and it was actually the crew that designed on the spot and kept tweaking the mission, which is very unusual for space exploration. But while doing that, I realized that this is the true future of space exploration. It's not about military tradition. It's not about top-down. It's not about controlling every single minute of the astronaut. It's about giving autonomy to the people you send out.
Okay, so that's like another minus for Star Trek series, I guess. But we're getting back to this. I have like another more theoretical question about the Seeker, or like that kind of projects in general, which are combining technology with art. So how scientifically enclosed a project like that should be to be more elaborated for the people?
No, I don't think there's a, it's all about communication. When we're talking about bringing science to an audience, it's all about communication, and many, many people are actually really interested in science. It's all about the way you communicate it, the way you deliver it, the way you present it. I don't see any issue there. But one correction, my projects are not always scientific. There's a lot of misunderstanding. For example, when people see Biomod, they think, oh, this is art and science. Actually, it's art and engineering, and that's a different thing. I usually talk about the triangle between art, science, and engineering. It's a much more precise way of talking about things. The interesting thing is that engineering has quite some things in common with art that they don't really have in common with science, for example. Let me put it this way. Engineering brings new things into the world that didn't exist before. It's a genesis of the future always. Solutions, technical solutions. Even though they might be very small, it's a new configuration that is brought into the world. The artists do the same thing. That's the paradigm. That's the paradigm of the avant-garde that we're using. It's artists are always at the forefront, and they bring new concepts, new ideas, new configurations into the world. Scientists, although they might also do that, are much more focused on unraveling the world, unraveling the existing world. So that's really a crucial difference. On the other hand, scientists, and I think good scientists and artists, tend to have in the back of their mind a more holistic view of things. And you find that engineers are very specialized often and very focused and very deeply focused on very specific parts of the world. If you talk to scientists who are working in the field of astronomy or particle physics or astrophysics, they usually have this in the back of their mind. They have this broader view of what it means to be a human in this vast cosmos. And so that's a kind of sensitivity that sometimes brings artists and scientists together. Now, this is not a black and white classification, because there are also scientists that are very single-minded, and there are definitely artists that are very single-minded. So this is more of a broad conceptual framework, but it really helps me to understand much better what I'm doing and what other people are doing in the field of technological art.
But art and science are like really strongly connected. Or they are becoming like strongly connected.
The problem with the whole art-science debate is that a lot of people have this need to bring them together as almost similar, which is also a problem for me. Like I said, there are similarities, but there's also very crucial differences that are typical for them. One of the differences is that even though they might move the scientist and the artist to a broader perspective of things, they do have a very different underlying view of reality. One crucial thing is the worldview. That is, the underlying worldview between artists and scientists is quite different. For a scientist, you're basically on the way of unraveling truth after truth and putting it into a sort of giant model. And we're on our way of building this full understanding. And even if we don't understand, we'll end up with like 99% of understanding of everything. This is inherent in scientific practice. I've done it myself. And by being exposed to cause and effect on a daily basis and rational relationships, you do start believing that reality might not be more than just mathematical relationships between molecules and organisms and things like that. For an artist, it has a different perspective. Artists are like, okay, you might expand your knowledge, but you'll never grasp full life, full existence. It's impossible. And I explain it, I always use a very specific visual. I use a visual of a disk. Imagine reality being this giant disk. The scientific model is a disk inside that disk that grows. It gets larger and larger and covers more and more of the surface of the larger disk. We're like grasping more and more of reality. And finally, the smaller disk of science will cover the entire disk of reality and will grasp everything. What a scientist and a philosopher will think is like, yes, that disk of knowledge is increasing, of course. But you know what? The edges of reality are constantly receding. They're constantly moving. You never get there. And it's the zone of movement, the zone of things you don't understand. That zone is very interesting. And sometimes you have to smash parts of the disc because some parts of that disc are actually not true and you have to rebuild them. So you never get there. And that's the beauty of being in this world. So that's where I think art and science are crucially, fundamentally different. And it gets completely snowed under in all these discussions. Oh my God, artists and scientists are so very similar. I do get a little irritated by these very simplistic discussions sometimes.
I actually don't think it's similar. I think it's really different and that it should collaborate more. It should be more connected. Yes. That was my point.
Yes, the connection, art and science collaborations are a topic on their own. How to bring artists and scientists together. Once again, it's all about communication. There are several ways in which you can bring them together. The most classical way is the artist is visualizing scientific data, scientific ideas, scientific worldview. This is the oldest, it's almost an ancient tradition where the artist is serving the purpose of the search for knowledge, right? And it's still nowadays. You have these art science projects and it's artists doing residencies in artist institutions and science institutions and then coming up with photos, with a series of photos or videos of beautiful microscopic images or something like that. Personally, that's the least interesting approach. The only reason I find this interesting is if it can build relationships between artists and scientists. And then based on those relationships, we can move forward. That's the only way I can see it interesting. I don't want to dismiss it, but for me, it's just a tool to build relationships. The second way, it's a rough classification of ways in which art and science can meet, but it serves a purpose for me. It's quite handy to understand what's going on. The second way is that an artist gets introduced into science properly, starts understanding what's going on, and then autonomously builds his or her own narrative around it. It's like taking a meta perspective on the practice of science. And this is a fully autonomous, artistic autonomous activity, which I find much more interesting. And then for me, my most favorite way of bringing art and science together, which is basically embodied in my projects like Seeker and Biomod, is that both the artist and the scientist co-create an artwork. And I've done that before. I've worked with a former colleague of mine, an evolutionary biologist from the University of Leuven. We created an evolutionary art piece. And this was really built by the two of us, this entire installation. Because the scientist I was working with, Professor Luc de Meester, he was open to look at things a little differently and to understand what it means to make an installation and how it can convey messages.
So communication and collaboration.
Yes.
Okay. And now if we get back to the Seeker thing and my favorite question, and you're less like, you had a lot of talks here in the past month, and you mentioned that like popular culture and mass media is mostly wrong about the ideas how humans should or could exist in space in general. And you presented the Starship Enterprise as a bad example of a living unit or an ecosystem. And it seems like the Seeker is trying to kind of rethink or resolve the problem of these wrong interpretations.
I do have a lot of respect for science fiction series and definitely for Star Trek, but it's an interesting departure point. The USS Enterprise as an icon of starships, I think it's probably the most well-known icon of starships. It's still a gorgeous design, but at the same time, it's a classic example of modernist design. It's monolithic, it's static, it's supposed to be universal, and it has this universal truth. You know, this is the system, and this is what we're going to use all over the universe. And also, there is no real role for biology there. I mean, it's really an architecture, and you put some people in there, and that's what it is. So what I'm trying to do is try to completely rethink what a starship could be like. And that's what I'm currently doing a PhD on at Delft University of Technology in Holland. So it's a topic of my new PhD. There are a few important departure points that I'm taking. First of all, I'm interested in fully or as much as possible integrating ecosystems, technological systems, and social systems, bringing them together, integrating them, instead of thinking into a paradigm of compartments where you have a biological compartment and then you have a people compartment and you have a technological compartment. I want to connect things. The reason I want to do this is because in this way, you will increase transparency. Things will be more visible. If people live more connected to their technological system, if they know what's going on and they understand what's going on with their technological system, and they have agency to communicate with that and to interact with that, they will, of course, feel more empowered, because specifically because of the transparency, but also because of the possibility of interacting with it. And I do think, overall, you will build a system that is more sustainable on a longer term. So that's why I'm really interested in integration. Another way I want to build systems that are more sustainable, or actually more resilient, because that's probably a better term to describe it, another way to build systems that are more resilient into the future is to embed evolvability into your system. So it's not building this monolithic designed unit, but it's designing something that can adjust and adapt, that has potential to change over time. And I'm literally thinking about evolving an evolving starship, a starship in which its architecture can actually evolve according to the new needs that it will encounter.
I think that some of the cultural constructs, or like the constructs of humanity, shouldn't be brought in space. Or, for example, how could you bring time into space if, like, even on Earth there are like two different times, like cyclical and linear, and in space where there is like so many wormholes and stuff like that, like how is it possible? Like, how can you bring biology to space? It's not meant to be there.
Yes, that's the whole, you know, well, there's no way around that. We're limited by our own biology. Our bodies are badly in need of Earth-like rhythms. So at this point, there's no way around of recreating those Earth-like rhythms in your spaceship. But I also believe that the future of space exploration will be modifying the human body, will be part of the future of space exploration. We can rebuild Earth as much as we can in outer space by taking along an ecosystem and creating a breathable atmosphere inside your spaceship, and even trying to simulate gravity by rotating spacecraft. This is all about recreating where we came from, so we don't have to adjust. But we might as well start adjusting our own bodies, and so we were more adapted to space. So I think that's, in the long run, that's definitely going to happen. Because there's sometimes a discussion, should humans go to outer space? Shouldn't we just use robots? And or should we modify the human body entirely so we can reinvent the human body? I don't think we need to go this crazy. I think a combination of recreating what we're used to on Earth, adjusting the human body, and collaborating with robots is the way to go.
Okay, so you wouldn't bring Lady Gaga to space, I guess.
I would prefer... Well, honestly, I don't care if Lady Gaga goes to space, but if she's the first concert... if she is representing the first concert in space, I'm a little unhappy about it, but hey, that's how culture goes.
Who would you pick for the first concert?
Oh, that's a good question. I can't answer that right now. I really need to think about this. I have a few bands that I wouldn't mind... I guess Boards of Canada would be quite nice.
Awesome. So now it's been like a week since
you
started.
Well,
a week of building the Seeker. So yeah, how's it going?
So we've been building Seeker for about 2 weeks now in the Museum of Modern Art here in Ljubljana. We've actually been shipping parts of a former Seeker project from Belgium to Slovenia. And that's very important because Seeker is literally an evolving artwork. It uses materials and concepts that were developed by former communities. It brings them to a new place, and then based on that, we continue to develop the project. And this happened in a very literal way here in Ljubljana. We took the base that was developed for the very first Seeker in Holland. We reconstructed that base here in the museum, and we built an entirely new architecture on top of that base. Moreover, tonight, the last people from an international group that have been working on Biomont and Seeker projects are joining us. So I'm not just working with a Slovenian community, I'm actually working with an international community, mostly people from Holland and Belgium that are joining us. We're 1 week away from the opening. We still have a lot to do. The architecture is being finished, more or less. The skeleton of the spaceship is being finished. Now we're moving on to covering the outside, building a full ecosystem inside, and designing the interior of the spaceship. So we still have a lot of work. If people are interested, they can actually join us. We're in the museum every day between 10 and 9. So people can just drop by and help out if you want to learn about hydroponics, aquaponics, interactive computer systems, interior design, in terms of spaceships. You should just simply join us. The opening is planned for next week on Friday, Friday the 13th, starting at 8 p.m. in the museum.
Komunikacijo med interplanetarnimi sistemi je in bo na zvezdni ladji Seeker vzdrževala Tina Dolinšek.
Intervju Radija Študent.